Tuesday, May 23rd, 2023. This is the Port Commission of the Port of Houston Authority Commissioners Meeting, 9:15 a.m. I'm going to call the meeting to order. Okay. So let me just start with welcome. Getting ready to have the start of summer. A lot of good things going on. It continues to work hard in the channel. One of the things that I wanted to highlight today is we just recently received the report of the economic impact of the Houston Ship Channel activity related to 2022. The last report we had was 2018, so we usually do this on a four-year cycle. Generally, Houston Ship Channel and its private-public terminals continue to be a major economic generator in the state and in the U.S. economy as well. In 2022, Houston Ship Channel and its terminals supported 3.4 million jobs nationally, which was a 5% growth over the 2018 numbers, and the channel supported 1.5 million jobs in Texas. Now, that's up 14% from 2018. Obviously, a lot of growth. And I think the important part of that is that that includes the sort of down in the pandemic and up in the pandemic, so it's an interesting baseline and a very good baseline for us. The marine cargo activity at the Houston Ship Channel terminals generated $439 billion of economic value for the state of Texas, massive amount of economic value. Marine cargo, on this marine cargo supported $10.6 billion in state and local taxes. Since 2018, the growth in marine cargo activity, especially with the strong growth in container activity for Houston terminals, result in growth of nearly 190,000 jobs supported in the state, as well as growth of $100 billion of economic value for the state of Texas over the 2018 numbers. When you look at the broad numbers in the U.S., in 2022, the Houston Ship Channel generated $906 billion of economic value to the U.S. I mean, that's getting close to the big trillion-dollar number, but a big number. This is a 13% growth over 2018. In 2022, the channel generated, as I said, $439.2 billion of economic value to Texas, which represents 30% growth since 2018 and also represents nearly a 20% of the Texas GDP goes through the port. So amazing numbers. We knew they were going to be up. I don't know if I thought they would be up this big. But what it takes is, in order to continue that trajectory of growth, it takes planning, it takes investment, it takes a great management and stewardship of this team here at Port Houston. And I just want to thank the team at Port Houston, all of our rank and file employees. It takes a team to make this happen. It really does. It's not just one person or one group. I also want to thank our labor partners, the ILA, the Seafarers, also the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, U.S. Coast Guard, pilots, of course, and all the private users, the 200 other terminals that are privately owned. Obviously, those folks have the same kind of issues we do, which is fighting for market share, fighting for talent in the channel, and they're doing a great job. And then finally, I just want to thank the commissioners around the table. This is not easy, and I understand the hard work it takes for everyone here to make sure that we're doing the right thing for the channel and for really the economy overall for Texas and for the U.S. So thank you for all your individual contributions and the contributions as a group. So thanks. Roger, do you want to, I guess you're going to say something in your remarks later. Any commissioners want to make comments?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Wendy and myself was on the team the other day that welcomed the new county commissioner, Leslie Coranis, Precinct 4 to the port. And our staff, as always, did a great job of explaining the benefit of the port to her and her group. She was very, very interested to learn more about the port. And the most important thing of the whole trip is that she said to us, what can I do for my office to help the port? So going forward in the future, if there's anything we need, I feel very comfortable that she will be there for us. And I was really impressed. And again, our group, our port staff was fantastic. Everybody except Tom. He was a bus driver.
Did he get lost?
And he really didn't impress me.
Hey, I couldn't help the potholes. It wasn't me.
Fill them.
That's it.
Great.
Tom drove by. I didn't have nothing to do with it.
Awesome.
But they did a great job.
That's great. Yeah, great. Any other commissioners, questions or comments? Or? Okay. Dean is joining us virtually today. Dean Corgi, Commissioner, I'm glad that you could make it virtually. I know you had some things going on, and I hope you're doing well.
Well, as Mark Twain said, rumors of my demise are greatly exaggerated. But I had kind of a close call this weekend with some appendicitis, but I got some excellent treatment at our great medical center here, and I'm doing fine. And I really hate to miss these meetings, but I'm here in spirit, and I'm online, and I hope y'all have a great meeting. But just want to let everybody know I'm okay, I feel great, and I got the situation taken care of.
All right, great. Good to hear.
Me stole your chair.
You're probably not going to give it up.
It take him long to jump in there.
That's great. Well, thanks, Dean, and wish you a good get well and get back in. Let's go ahead on to item C1, which is approval of minutes from the May 2nd meeting.
Second.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Okay. D1, Roger.
Yes. Good morning, and quick update on kind of where we're at for the year as far as our cargo operations at our public facilities. On the container side, the exports continue to outpace the historic 2022 volumes. Loaded exports, all volumes were up. Loaded exports specifically are up 17% year to date compared to last year, due in large part to the continuing demand for shipment of plastic resins. In total, we handled over 1 million loaded container TEUs through April, and the total with total volume of loads and empties 1.24 million TEU for the year. That's the fastest we ever surpassed the 1 million mark. We've done it earlier than any year before. We do, as we reported before, continuing to see a slight softening of the import cargo compared to the record-breaking volumes of 2022. Container cargo's normalizing as we projected and budgeted for the year, so we're pretty much spot on what we thought would happen so far. We see a little softening of the exports as well. I'm going to leave to Mike Schaffner, who's going to give the operations report today, a little more detail about the container activity specifically in the month of April. For the containers as well as our general cargo multi-purpose facilities. The only other thing I want to do this morning is show a couple of pictures. We know we have some new ship-to-shore cranes coming. Mm-hmm. I think there's been some emails out, but Kelly, if you'll flip to that first slide. There they are. They left Shanghai a few weeks ago. Those are our three cranes on the right side on that ship as well. There's two ship-to-shore cranes going to the port of New York, New Jersey. Those are lowered because they have to go under a bridge before they get to the port in New York, New Jersey, but they're on the way. The cranes are due to arrive in July. The next slide. And we're tracking this like we're tracking Santa Claus. They're coming around as of yesterday. What is it, a 70-something day trip from Shanghai to Houston, again, be here around the middle of July. So in order, and the other thing that in conjunction with that, one more slide just to kind of give you an update. We talk about these things, but you don't see them. There's the berth that it's going to. We'll be certainly ready to accept those cranes. All the substructure's been done. They're just pouring the deck on that, so it'll be ready by the time the cranes get here. Cranes should be in full operation, I think, by August, September.
Yeah.
Okay. So September, October, and we'll have fully functional new berth at that time. So anyway, I just thought it was important to give a little visual of what was going on with the cranes and with the docks and the progress that we're making at Bayport, and continuing to make those investments for the future demand that we see coming in Houston. And with that, I'll turn it back to you, Chairman.
Okay. Any questions, comments, commissioners?
Just more progress.
There you go. I like the idea that there are just two cranes in New York.
Yeah.
Three from Houston.
And they didn't look nearly as nice as ours.
They didn't. They didn't, yeah. So, okay. Are they exactly the exact same cranes?
Probably very close, okay. Structurally, I'm sure. But I'm assuming those are going to APM Terminal since they're painted that color.
Yeah,
Port Elizabeth.
Gotcha. So. Okay, let's go then to appearances. We'll start with Captain Jason Smith. I saw you there.
Yeah.
Captain, welcome.
Sir, just for the record, the cranes are the same, but their float commit sections are bigger. Right? Chairman Campo and Commissioners, Mr. Gunther, thank you for your time. I asked for some time as I prepare for retirement and change of command on June 9th. So this will be my last opportunity to brief the commission, and I really wanted to thank you. Thank you all for your, really personally, and on behalf of the 1,500 women and men that serve the Coast Guard in this area, I want to thank you for making us feel part of the community. You certainly have done that and more. And secondly, I also want to thank you for the partnership that I've had before I got here, and certainly those that we've built since I've been here. Throughout my 3 years in the port, we have together, as a maritime community, supported over 700,000 transit in the port and the Houston Ship Channel. In addition to that, over 8 million tons of cargo. That's critical not only for this great nation, but for the world. Throughout this time together, we've kept our mariners from all over the world safe in our port from COVID, not only through mitigation, but through efforts including the efforts from the Seafarers Center in working to provide vaccines for seafarers, more vaccines here than any other port in the United States combined. Throughout this time, we together with the expertise of our pilots, as you mentioned before, Commissioner, and also with the coordination of our vessel traffic service, we've kept the channel moving safely, even through one of the nation's most complex and largest stretching projects, as you all know, the $1 billion Project 11. Throughout this time, we together have hardened our OT and IT in order to protect critical port infrastructure from our adversaries. And throughout this time, we have fostered open communication at many levels, which I believe is the most robust Harbor Safety Committee, Area Committee, Maritime Security Committee, roundtable discussions, industry days, and other venues. And throughout this time, we have educated more than 3,000 students through the 11 maritime high schools and other PHPME, or Port Houston Partnership Maritime Education outreach events, creating the future leaders of our port. And throughout this time, we have together formalized agreements for Marcus in improving our preparation and response to hurricanes and other heavy weather events, and also improve emergency response capabilities and communication. In closing, I want to thank you for the Commission for putting an emphasis on sustainability and diversity, in addition to the continuous emphasis on keeping our waterways safe, secure, and clean. All of this is because we are the nation's largest port. All of this is because we have the strongest relationships, and all of this is because we are the nation's best. So thank you very much for allowing me to serve this great port. I'm realizing now that I should have adjusted the screen so you don't see my head cut off.
We can see it just fine.
Thank you. You know, thank you, and you'll be missed. Thanks for your service, and just another thing, your engagement and partnering in maritime education has been very valuable. You've promoted that well, and continue to do that. I think plan to continue to do that after you leave. So we really appreciate it. It's very important for our industry.
Great, thank you very much.
Thanks, Captain.
Thank you.
Commissioners.
Thank you for your service.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely. I just want to echo thank you very much for the partnership. The team really feels connected as a partner, and I think that's really, really important. And thank you for your hard work, and good luck in your next adventure.
Great. Thank you very much. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, we have a couple other folks that have signed up to speak. First up, we have Naomi Yoder of the Healthy Gulf. Naomi, are you here? Okay, there you are. Yeah. Hello. Welcome.
Thank you so much. Let's come back to follow. Thank you, Kevin. I wanted to talk about Project 11. Let me take this off. I spoke with y'all last month about Project 11, so a little follow-up. I wanted to give a little bit of context of what we're concerned about with Project 11 and some of the details behind the meetings that I had mentioned that had taken place in our plan. So, as I said last time, Healthy Ports Community Coalition, which Healthy Gulf is a part of, in collaboration with EDS, Environmental Defense Limited, and Lonestar Legal Aid, have reached out to a number of elected and appointed officials, especially because of our concerns about the toxic dredge soils, diesel pollution from dredging equipment, and environmental justice. Those issues, especially the toxic dredge soils and diesel pollution, have not been addressed by the Corps of Engineers or the Port of Houston adequately. Mayor Turner met with Corps Colonel Blackman on April 14th at our request to express his serious concern that the toxic dredge soils from Project 11 should not be placed in disposal areas located adjacent to environmental justice communities such as Pleasantville, Galena Park, Channelview, and Pasadena. These communities are already heavily overburdened by air pollutants and other toxic pollutants, and we think it is highly likely that the sediment stretched for Project 11 will hold at least some harmful pollutants. Since NEPA analyses on ship channel sediments in the past have shown extensive toxic contamination. Regardless, we request that these communities and the many other EJ communities along the ship channel not receive any more pollution burden than they already suffer under. In fact, we'd like to see the opposite, reduction and elimination of pollution that already affects those neighborhoods. Furthermore, the Corps' own NEPA environmental justice review was seriously deficient and incorrectly concluded based on a faulty methodology that higher income white residents were going to be more impacted by the dredged soils than lower income minority residents. I'm sorry, not by the dredged soils, but just by Project 11 overall. Also at our request, EPA Regional Administrator Dr. Nance met separately with Colonel Blackman on April 14th to similarly express concerns about the toxic dredged soils and diesel pollution. Administrator Nance believes that the original environmental impact statement and EIS should be revisited. New FEMA flood maps, NOAA rainfall intensity data, and sea level rise research published after Hurricane Harvey strongly suggest the need to reevaluate the community and environmental risks posed by Project 11. These concerns, in part, led to the meeting and site visits that are now planned for June with community participation in June. Lastly, I don't think I mentioned last time that the Healthy Ports Community Coalition, in collaboration that I mentioned before, has sent a letter dated April 19, 2023, to the Assistant Secretary of the Army for Civil Works, Michael Connor, requesting a meeting. The purpose of the meeting is to discuss environmental justice and climate change concerns that were ignored by the Corps and the EPA during the NEPA process. How am I on time?
You're over, but that's
you're
okay.
Over. Oh, okay.
No worries.
Okay, just a couple more points then. I'd like to summarize some of our specific concerns about Project 11. It will dump over 9.1 million cubic yards of dredged soils known to contain toxins such as PCBs, metals, and dioxins, according to the EIS, into placement areas adjacent to heavily overburdened environmental justice communities. The emissions from the old diesel dredging equipment the Corps plans to use will generate as much pollution as a large petroleum refinery. That is, in, for example, over 3,600 tons of NOx emissions. Three more points. The Glendale placement area has already been breached once during Hurricane Harvey, and the environmental impact statement did not account for elevated flood risk in this or other placement locations. One more, the existing and planned berms are being built for the placement areas are being built to 1950s and 60s era engineering standards and have not been updated to address climate change and increased flood risk. And finally, the Fish and Wildlife Service recommended that the Corps use at least 75% of clean dredged soils for beneficial uses. However, the current plan is only using 11% for beneficial use. So thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Are you aware of the fact that all of that is tested by the feds, the Coast Guard, and everybody else before it's moved?
Well, we hope so.
What do you mean you hope so? You don't trust the federal government, or you don't trust the Coast Guard? Which one do you not trust?
We don't trust that we will be informed of the results.
They should call you to tell you they're posting it, checking it?
We check, and so far we have not seen those results.
Well, I can assure you that this board has checked everything that's gone come out of that, been checked before it was ever moved.
Okay. And
if you've got a problem with that, you're going to have to take it up to someone else.
Well, I think the key is that we need to continue the dialogue, continue the meetings that we have helped you, helped all the environmental groups set up with the Corps of Engineers. Obviously, the Port Houston doesn't control ultimately how the Corps executes their project. It is based on federal law, and we have to work through those, and that's why we do need to keep the dialogue going and communication going with everybody. So thank you. I appreciate
sure.
it.
And just to kind of put a point on this is, you know, respectfully, mm-hmm. it's the commission also that has some influence mm-hmm. on how, you know, specific results are, you know, gotten or in what time line, right. for example. Or, you know, just making sure that certain limits are not overreached. So
Roger. Roger has a comment.
Yeah, and thank you for coming, Naomi. And I just want to add, we did receive a 66 very detailed letter. We acknowledge that there's a lot to consume, a lot to respond to. We've been working with the local groups about the considerations for that response, and we'll continue. We actually, it's being represented by the Lone Star Legal Aid Group. We've responded to them recently, and we'll continue to work with the Corps and the EPA and the TCEQ. We're going to continue to do that, and I'm going to meet with the EPA regional administrator on June 22nd, and, you know, we want to work with the communities and the Corps to explore the opportunities to do this right, and we'll continue to do that. So that's really all that I can say. But I want to acknowledge that we have received the letter. There's a whole lot to it. There's a lot to respond to, and we need to do that accurately and completely. And we're working with the Corps to make sure that that happens.
Great, thanks. And we just look forward to continued participation.
Thanks. Absolutely, thank you. Okay, next up is Arande Torvino of HPCC. Arande, there you are. Okay, good.
Hi.
Great to see you in person.
Good to see you, too.
Absolutely.
Commissioner, thank you. Mr. Chairman, I apologize. Good morning. My name is Arande Torvino, and I work for Public Citizen and also support the Mental Health Support Community Coalition. I'm also a community member. I live not too far from the port, within 5 miles. So I know exactly, these are my neighborhoods, right? And today, First of all, I want to say thank you to several people on the team, including, Rich Burns and Trey and Maria. And so I appreciate how helpful everyone's been in trying to, create that bridge of communication between the port and community. So we appreciate that communication line is open now. What I will say is I wouldn't be doing my personal job if I didn't point out the fact that, we're on day 8 or 9 of air alerts. If you look on your phone and you look on the weather app, it probably says air quality alert ending tomorrow at 6 p.m. But that it says tomorrow, since last week. So we don't know how long it's going to take. Within 2 weeks, we have 4 different accidents in the city or around the city, right, that are affecting our air quality. And so I say that not to say that that's on the board. However, it's on all of us because we all live here. More than a third of Americans live with unhealthy air. More than 1 in 3 people. That's insane. That is unconscionable. So it's not exactly like we can just say, oh, people can move, people can go somewhere else. No, we're already ruining air, all around us, right? So it's all on all of us to do our part. And so not only I'm a little nervous. I get nervous every time I come up here. Not only is it that more than 1 in 30 people live in unhealthy air, but Latino children are twice as likely to die from asthma than a white child. Twice as likely. And a black child is 4 times as likely to be hospitalized from asthma. 4 times. That's crazy. And so clearly there's a problem. And to me, the point is not to point fingers at who is the source of the problem necessarily, because the mess is coming from a lot of directions, right? There is poison in our food, there's poison in our air, in our water. So at a certain point, we have to say enough is enough. Our children should not be breathing this. Our children should not be eating this. We need to do something. And so what I ask is, I know that the port, for example, renews leases for chemical plants, right, at 30 years at a time. And so maybe it's time to explore, and I'm not saying maybe this is the answer exactly, but explore how can we create a good neighbor provision that perhaps could be voluntary, because perhaps it's not voluntary, right? It's something that we need to discuss, because as someone who is leasing land, right, if I was leasing land to a business, and this is not my idea, someone from my colleague Cleo from Act brought this up, right? He's a business owner and he owns land and he's leasing it out to someone who's doing something illegal.
Just wrap up in a second. That's okay. We did not nail me extra time, so you can have.
Okay, I appreciate that. Yeah.
Okay.
So the point is that we need to figure out. So the answer is not, no, that's not on us, right? The answer is, let's have a discussion, right? Let's explore what a better solution is, because more than a third of Americans breathing unhealthy air is just not acceptable. And then I'll wrap it up by saying that, again, it all goes down to if we're breathing unhealthy air, if we're breathing poison, that's holding us back. That's making us less productive people. That's making us less effective members of society. We want to be effective members of society. We want to see this world get better. So let's do it together.
Absolutely. We all need to be a part of the solution, not the problem.
Yes, sir.
We all agree with that. Getting there is tough, as we know.
Of course it is.
Okay.
But we've
got to work.
We're tough.
I agree.
We're tough. We can do it.
Great. This is any comments coming? Okay. Thank you. Appreciate that. All right. So let's move on then to executive. And I think that executive, we have Garrick Henry is going to take us through F1, right?
Garrick wasn't here.
Garrick's not.
I'll just do it real quick.
Why don't you do it, Tom?
The first one is F1 is for two media monitoring things. One is to provide monitoring services, which is they just have a software that flags any type of reference to the port or as commissioners or employees so that we know what's going on in the press. The second one is for the distribution of our press release.
Okay.
So I ask you to approve F1, and then Eric will do F2.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We need to have Carrick there for another 6 days.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's...
The 29th is the last day, unless there's a special session. Go ahead.
Okay, F2, let me go briefly through this, describing what's happened here. As the commissioners know, the Weinberg and Goddard firm for many years collected delinquent taxes on behalf of not only Harris County, but the city, HISD, and others. And we're talking about taxes that are payable after 100 payments. And in the case of the county, I'm told that that's about 1%, roughly 1% of the total. In 2020, Commissioner's Court requested the attorney's office, county attorney's office, to investigate whether they could take over that activity. And they produced reports saying that they could, based on their experience collecting toll road delinquencies. And so the county directed the Harris County attorney's office to terminate the contract. It was terminated on April 20th. We were told about it a couple of weeks later. Basically, what that termination means is as of June 20th, the county attorney is going to take over collection of those post-July 1 taxes on behalf of the county. They are also, they mean the county is working out a transition agreement because the Linewater firm that does not only do the collections, you know, the actual court activity, but they also sort of have all of the administrative apparatus. And so my understanding, the agreement has not been finalized, but my understanding is that the county will continue to rely on their services for roughly a year. Essentially, that means leasing the system, at least in some ways, and the operations of the system. And then the county is going to explore a software and administrative solution for taking over those administrative activities. So what we brought to you today is simply the and ultimately that's the responsibility of the county anyway on behalf of the Port Authority.
Yes, okay. So, motion.
Yes, sorry. So what we're bringing to you today is the interlocal agreement to collect the tax.
Got it.
So moved.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thanks, Eric.
Thank you.
Okay, next business section. Amy.
Morning, Chairman.
Morning.
Commissioner. I had a quick update on district equity activities. Well, first mentioned that the executive leadership development program, as you're aware, is well underway. All the 360 degree reports, assessments rather, have been completed. I want to personally thank all of those who participated in that. That's going to be instrumental in each of the members completing their personal development. And the team has, the cohort has selected two teams for to complete two projects, and you'll hear more about that later on this year. Our Opportunity U, which is our main program that we use to educate and increase the capacity for our SMWBE firms. Cohort 3 was completed in April, and that is done in partnership with some of our prime partners, our PCM, or Project and Construction Management Group, procurement, legal, and others. And so we can't do it without them, but it was a successful session. We actually featured two graduates in our business ethics committee meeting last month, and they were Teresa Martinez with JDC Corp and Stanley Collins with Avon Mobile. Both have secured contracts with Corp. And we had 35 graduates in that cohort. 15 of the 35 have either entered into agreements with Corp Houston or have partnered with each other on transactions. So it was a very successful cohort. And part of that, I think, is because we focused this cohort on the construction industry as well as those that support construction. So we did a more focused session. I want to give a shout out without stealing thunder to Charles Thompson and his IT group. There's an
provide more details on, but they've really gone above and beyond in their efforts to increase our FMWD. And lastly, I want to update you on the search for our BE director, business equity director. That search is now complete, and our new director will start June 12th. And I only have one item on today's agenda, and that is the approval or request for approval to enter into a strategic alliance memorandum between the U.S. Small Business Administration, Houston office, and Fort Houston. This is really to codify or document our existing relationship, which has been long-term. We partner on a lot of different initiatives, and they've asked us to really document that and solidify it. So there's no additional cost or commitment on either party's part, but I just want to get your approval to enter into that agreement.
Is there a motion?
So moved.
Any questions or comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Maxine, appreciate it.
Thank you.
Let's see. Up next, we're going to have Charlie on Jenkins. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Chairman, Commission. Thank you for the opportunity to share the channel infrastructure update. First off, just a few brief comments, augmenting a little bit of what Roger said about the community issue. We do understand that there are community concerns about the safety and integrity of the placement areas. We may differ on some of the facts and the characterizations, but we take these concerns very, very seriously, and we're working and are committed to having an open dialogue and good communication. While we've been looking at the 66-page memo, very hard with the Corps, we're really working to analyze these issues, as Roger said, and I gather reliable information, provide a very thoughtful and thorough response, and we'll have that done by the 22nd. Moving over to Project 11, some monthly updates that we do for the Commission now. First off, pleased to say we're still on schedule and budget for all port-led contracts, thanks to Lori and our teams. Rod's here today. We have an overall net change order savings over all of the contracts, and as I reported last month, three have been complete. We have many more ongoing. On Segment 1A, Great Lakes is still struggling to complete the island. We're making some progress, but it's a difficult challenge. And we expect that to hopefully be complete this fall. On Segment 1B and 2, Weeks Marine is dredging to schedule. They have completed the North Shore Bank at Bayport, where they dredge very, very close to the community, and it might be the reason of the environmental justice statement with the Corps. And Bayport and Barbara Scott were within a few hundred feet of the homes in Shore Acres, Pasadena, and LaPorte. But we're up here, we're a much larger distance, but it's just a supposition, it's not a fact. So we'll see, we'll learn more about that as we go on. And we should be beginning our Dock 1 area for the Port Authority in about 2 weeks, prepping for its future development as they move up the Bayport Channel. On Curtin Maritime, the other part of that big contract, they have been working on finishing our oyster mitigation, which totals just over 300 acres. And we're pleased to report that those oyster reef mitigation projects should be complete this week. So it's gone very well to schedule. Curtin will now be switching to a removal of the light silts, the things we can't use beneficially, to the offshore disposal area as planned. And that should begin as soon as the oyster work is finalized, again, this week. Moving up, we have then the last segment to award for the Bay, Segment 1C. That is subject to a Torrent Energy Solution, as you're aware, and we're planning to advertise that job in July with the goal of completing construction of the complete Bay in December of 2024. Package 7, led by the Corps, is Barbara Scott. It is being advertised by them in June. It's a two-year construction contract that will actually be completed in December of 25. Slightly off schedule from what we originally had proposed with their contracting, but they are working hard and we're supporting them to get that executed. Up in Segment 4, the Corps did not receive the full congressional funding to keep the project on schedule. They are beginning work on a new placement site in East 2 Clinton with $10.7 million that was funded by Congress. That job is expected to advertise in October of 2023, And then the Beltway 8 disposal area that supports Segment 4 will be subject to future funding. Moving back up to the end, Segment 5 and 6 and 5 to the training basin up here, the Corps continues to prepare the design and focus on the use of the Glendale and filter bed placement areas, putting a clay cap on those sites and closing them out from use from now on. And we are following up on the community concerns related to the Corps EPA port, and we'll be doing a site visit with the EPA and the community as previously discussed. The turning basin dredging is right now scheduled 1 year off of original schedule due to funding, December of 26 is the second completion rather than 25. Now, switching to the agenda, we only have four items this month, fairly light. I'm going to bring up two of those in particular. First is H1. It's a request to amend a $13.4 million contract to HDR by $605,000. There's three purposes. First is additional PM support needed. Second is to support segments 3 and 4 and the Corps' work to build those projects for us, which was not the original plan. And then lastly, about a half of the money, or a third of the money, is for new design review and support of the Corps' planning for segments 5 and 6, which wasn't previously covered in contracts. The second agenda item I'd like to point out is H3, a new construction permit to Watco Facilities. It's just upstream of Greens Bayou. This is particularly interesting. This was actually a bit of property the port was going to have to acquire through easement to build Project 11. The owner is actually developing the property, and we have a clause in there that if they don't, we will be getting an easement, but if they do, they're able to get out of the way. That actually will save us some time and effort in the development of Segment 4 at a later date, so that's a great news. The other two RCAs are standard, and there are no CenterPoint Energy activities on this.
Is there a motion?
Second.
Okay, any questions or comments?
I have a quick observation. Mm-hmm. That's with regard to item one. We continue to incrementally fund more than our one half of the overall project. And I don't know if y'all noticed, but in nearly every agenda, we are spending more and more money on basically north of our container facilities. It's always been my understanding that it was kind of the intent of the port to, since our partner's money has never shown up.
Never will.
Yeah, that we were going to very carefully study expenditures above the container terminals on those future phases. Yet, here's another $605,000 that we're chipping in that at least partially will go to those segments that, in my opinion, are not crucial to the port's operations. At some point, I would like to hear some assurances we're going to get that money back at some point. We are well past funding 50% of this project. And again, I've heard nothing over the last year or so as to the status of our industry partners' $500 million that they were going to pledge. And I'm afraid at the end of the day, we're going to foot the bill for the whole thing.
Well, we still have ongoing looking at not more than looking, preparing for our statutory authority to implement a user fee to collect back for the expenditures that we're making proportionally to the use and ship chain. So, that's been in play, and we're still looking at those opportunities, and we plan to do it. You can't implement the fee until the project's complete, but we plan to have that well in advance of the completion of the project, the institute of fees.
So is it now our intent to fund the whole thing?
So the users will end up paying for it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, through a user fee based upon the use and benefit that they receive.
Who's going to use that end of the deal, basically? your containers are not going to go up there, are they?
No, I mean, there's several. We got a turnip basin. We've got, you know, several. Jacinta Port Care in some of our facilities, but, you know, the majority is certainly the industries, energy, chemical, petrochemical industry.
And clearly, the Bay Reach part of the channel benefits everyone in the channel, and that's where the preponderance of our money is going. Just to go through simple numbers so everybody understands again, roughly, usually it's a 65% federal, 35% local. And in this case, depending upon how you move numbers here and there, it's more like 72% local and 28% federal. And of the 28%, a lot of it hasn't been funded yet. I think we still need, what, $180 million,
yes,
plus or minus? We've got about $160 million, plus or minus, that's been funded or appropriated, not necessarily funded yet because we haven't spent the money on the segment that Charlie was talking about yet. But we need additional funding to get to those numbers, obviously. And then ultimately, as you recall, the industry put forth their sort of contribution is that they support the fee concept, that users of the fee will, in fact, of the channel will, in fact, pay a fee to reimburse the port in that area. But that was their proposal, and our response to them was, we originally and thought we would get an immediate cash contributions. That didn't happen. And so, and as Roger pointed out, the issue that you have is you can't charge the fee until it's open, and the Bay Reach is not going to be open until the end of 2024. And in the meantime, there's other ports in Texas that are sort of pioneering the fee scenario and probably going to have some case law related to it as well by the time we get ready to charge our fee, and that will hopefully pave the way for us to be able to reimburse money from the industry. And the theory behind it, obviously, is that if the ship is benefiting from, which most are benefiting from, the deepening and widening of the channel, then in fact they will pay that fee, and then they'll pass it on to their customers, and the customers are the energy companies and whoever, the 200 terminals that operate in the channel. So that's the plan today, and you know, we'll see how it evolves over time. But to your point, Commissioner Don Carlos, we do have to make sure that we are judicious with our capital on all of the channel. But it does, the upper parts of the channel do benefit the port as well. So it's a good point to make sure we all focus on, and we will.
Questions, so, Chairman? Yeah. You know, I want to say also that they didn't tell us in front of Congress and the world that they were going to fund half this project. They did not tell us, but you show us how we can charge it back. Right. They said, we're bringing money. And I agree with Commissioner Carlos. I mean, if we sit here and just keep paying and keep paying, even though we have to do this thing, we might not ever get our money back. And that's not what the industry told us that they was going to do. So how we do it, I don't know. But if you can, you know, maybe have contact with those folks and tell them, we want them to put up half of this damn money. And we're going to fund this whole thing. And there's no question about it. You can see which way it's going.
That or just back off of this and put it on hold. That's $600,000.
So quick comment on the $605,000. A big portion is supporting Borrower's Cut, which has been federally funded, and that's very critical. Supporting that, or Borrower's Cut will not be kept to schedule. So that is a key part of the $605,000. It is for design support. Sir, what you're really talking about, in my simple view, is the construction support for segment 4, 5, and 6. The $180 million that's needed to complete is at 100% federal funding. If we don't get 100% federal funding, where we would then use the credits we've earned, which so far we've applied for $82 million in credits for the over expenditure in 1A and the extra design work that we've done. So far it's $82 million. If we don't get that credit funded by Congress, it'll be up to the Port Commission at that point to allow to fund the core, our remaining 25%, or to not let the construction project go forward. So the commission holds the key on segment 4, 5, and 6 for the execution of the construction. The 180 is 100% funded, intended to use credits.
Yeah, to Charlie's point, the statement you made a minute ago, which is a new statement that I heard, which was that we have consistently been have stated consistently that the entire channel, all the upper parts of the channel from the Bay Reach, will be completed by the end of 2025.
Correct.
And you had mentioned in your opening remarks that it was likely to be 2026 now.
We did not get funding in 2023 to keep the project on schedule. I intended to inform in the last month, it was in my notes, it might not have been descriptive enough, but the lack of federal funding in 2023 for construction, we got 10.7, we requested 189, will delay the projects by 1 year, subject to funding this winter, December, January timeframe. If that funding's delayed, it's going to move again unless the Port Commission decided to fund. The message clearly so far is we've done our part.
Right. So, I think to that point, that's why I want to highlight that, put an exclamation point on that. So it's already 1 year delayed because we don't have the funding from the federal government, and that's above and beyond what we've already funded, the 70. If the federal government funds the additional $180 million, And you combine the total cost, we're still, Port Authority is still at 72% plus or minus, correct? That's kind of the odd numbers we've been talking about.
190, 146, yeah. Roughly.
Roughly. So it might be a percentage or two on the margins, but at the end of the day, that additional funding, and I want this to be clear to industry participants that are either in the room or listening to this call or are going to read the transcript, is that that funding, if it doesn't come from the federal government, is likely to delay the upper reach part of the channel longer than 2026 now.
That's correct.
And that's a direct result of the lack of industry funding that you're talking about, Commissioner Don Carlos and Commissioner Fitzgerald. And so the waiting to see on the fee could, in fact, delay the upper reaches of the channel longer than 2026.
Exactly.
So I want to make sure that's in the record so everybody understands that. And then we will, as a commission, we'll have to decide as we go forward what we're going to do about that, either keep the delay going or do something different. And we don't have to make that decision today. And the $605,000 under H1 is clearly in the best interest of the Port Authority and everyone else to fund so we can get this work done in and around the
Barber's Cut and the place areas
that we're talking about.
Now, let me be clear. I'm not opposed to this. I just made the observation that we continue to fund. Now we're moving into funding more and more of the operations of the channel.
Mm-hmm.
I understand that the entire project is, to an extent, beneficial to the port, certainly the turning basin and such as that. But most of these commissioners were here when it was represented in this room by industry that they were going to pay half the cost, and we have yet to see a dime.
That's right.
And I'm
not going to see a dime.
Chairman, let me just clear. You're right. The remainder of the projects that we're talking about, the segment 3, which is Barber's Cut, segment 4, and on up the channel, are traditional, we'll call it cost share, core projects where we're cost share. Remember, we made the decision, and rightfully so, when Corps did not authorize the segments through the bay, that we had to move forward, or we still might be searching for an authorization, which is very beneficial to Port Authority and to all of the. So we made that decision. I think it was a big chunk at the time that we decided. Remember, they came and proposed a user fee as well. So that's been on the table. That's going to happen.
Much after.
No, it was.
It was.
No, quite, no question about it. But I'm just saying the commitment to, quote, pay for half was presented in that matter. We are the ones that have to do that, and we're looking forward.
So do we have a contingency if the court finds that user fee is not legal?
That's the ultimate question, right?
Yeah. Based on the Sabine Nash case, I feel fully confident, you know, as confident as any lawyer can ever be, that we will be able to charge a user fee. So far, the opponents of the Sabine Neches have lost at the district court. lost the Supreme Court, I mean, lost the Court of Appeals. We'll see what the Supreme Court does. But it was a very aggressive fee. It is not our intention, although we're exploring it based on that case. It's not our intention to do anything that goes beyond the letter of the statute. And the only thing I wanted to add is we are on schedule right now to present to the commission at year end or beginning of next year our design for that fee, with the idea that then we will go through the public hearing process and things like that and be able through 2024 and be able to implement the fee when the Bay Reach segments are complete. So we are on that schedule right now. We are working, Charlie and I, George Frisby, outside lawyer, we are all working on that as we speak. And we've been talking with Roger and others as well, obviously. So that is on its way. And I feel, like I said, as confident as I can be that we will have a fee that is going to be enforceable. It's going to bring funding for, you know, as the chairman said, to us for the benefits that others have received.
Basically, aren't we just simply saying that we're going to raise a user's fee to pay for the half that we thought they were going to pay?
Well, it's not going to be half. It's going to be based on the statute.
Whatever portion there was.
They're
still not putting any money in. We're raising our customers' fees to get the money.
No, it's going to be their vessels that pay the fee. That's how it works.
Other than
it'll be all the customers.
Well, it's probably going to.
Well, no, see, that's the problem. That's the problem.
So Commissioner, I don't think we need to debate this here. We're going to have a lot of time to debate.
Can we do this in executive session? Because I got something I want to say.
Well, go ahead then.
Before we do all.
But I think the key.
Whatever we do, we got to be fair with everybody who is supporting this port.
No question.
Absolutely.
And we can't say, well, we hope. We got to know before we do it. I wouldn't vote for it unless I make sure everybody's treated fairly.
And we'll have lots of vetting and lots of public hearings.
That's what the statute requires.
Yeah, right. That's our intention.
Right.
And we actually have communicated with the industry.
Periodically.
All the industry.
The whole industry.
The whole industry. Port Bureau, we made
through
a
the Port Bureau, all the industry.
We've talked to our
so why fans. Wouldn't we just table it for a month and get all of this straightened out?
Well, number one, this is an important part of this 605 is not relevant to the discussion of a fee. And it would put us back on our barber's cut dredging, and we need to get that done. And so
put us back 1 month to find out?
Well, no, I don't think it has anything to do with it.
And the Glendale filter bed design support to make sure we believe it's adequate to protect the port community concerns.
Absolutely. The debate on the fee is going to be a robust, multi-month debate that we have on the fee. And we're going to have users come in and talk to us, and it's going to be a public discussion about what the fee is, how the statute works, who's benefiting from it, and what the ultimate issue is. So anyone, whether it's a container ship or a gas ship, is going to be able to come and talk about it, and then the commission is going to be able to debate it. This 605 it might be the thing that got us talking about it, but it's an important part of keeping us on schedule for the Bay Reach part of the channel.
I agree with that.
Okay?
But I also agree that basically what we're doing is setting up a user's fee that seems like to me that everybody's going to pay the fee for that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm still wondering, where are they? Is it because they own one of the boats? Is that how we do it? It seems like to me we're raising our fees to pay the half that they came in.
In theory, what happens is that the fee gets passed on to the customer just like any other, you know, like when you have inflation, what happens? People raise the prices for all the products, including the actual people who use the ships to put either energy cargoes in it whatever they're shipping.
So the fee is not going to have anything to do with it. They're still going to come forward with their half.
No.
That's what I thought.
No.
In other words, we're going to pay for it. Indirectly, we're going to pay for it.
Well, that's like I said before, it's another, we're going to have lots of great debate on this issue, but it's just not time to do it today.
The simplest thing to say is we're still pushing up the channel.
It seems like to me it's time to get it settled.
You can't get it settled until we get closer to the end of the project. That's the issue.
And the new fee is designed to bring an infusion of new capital, not from our customer base, into the Project 11 cost. That's as simply as I can say it. So there will be obviously be a very rigorous debate.
Yeah.
And this is the easy debate. The debate is very challenging, but
right.
We're all committed.
No question.
And I think we're in good alignment when the facts come out, from what I've heard.
Okay, so can we move on then, and get a motion to approve H1 through 4?
Thank you, I already have it.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Well, let's go ahead and vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, good.
I oppose on that one.
You oppose on number one?
Yeah, the one.
Okay.
The one that we're talking about.
Just the, make a note that Commissioner.
600,000.
Okay.
Got it. Vote no on that one.
All right, let's go to commercial. Mr. Mosley, how are you today?
Sir, good morning.
Morning.
Hey. Good job. Happy to provide a quick update on the commercial division for the court. We just released our Navigator magazine, spring issue, so please check it out. We're putting the finishing touches on our annual report for 2022. Just checking some financial numbers with our friends in finance to check for accuracy. And on the sales side, on trade development, we've seen some movement in terms of some new commodities that have been appearing, and in terms of solar panels. It looks like a lot of the solar panel business is now starting to catch on. As a matter of fact, our trade development team led by Dominic Stein and his team worked diligently together with operations to clear out a large slug of long-dwelling containers that were full of solar panels at our container facilities. So I want to thank Dominic and his team for having done that. And sort of connecting the dots with our economic development efforts, we've also seen the same thing happening with requests for information. RFIs that are out there in the region for economic development are tied to solar as well. We've seen Project Wonderwall, a $250 million capital investment project for solar panel manufacturing that's going to create 300 new jobs. Project Cranberry Sauce, which is a lithium ion battery manufacturer, 750 new jobs. And Project Top Panel, which is also a solar module manufacturing project, which is going to bring 420 new jobs. Those are all projects we're working together with our economic development partners in the region to bring to Houston and carry more cargo across our docks. So I'm happy to report a little bit of that on activities at the commercial division. We've also been working together with our ocean carriers, our BCOs, railroads to develop new services. Mike Schaffner, our operations team, is going to share a little bit more information on some new developments there. Today I have 9 items for your consideration. 2 are marketing related, 7 are real estate related. On the 7 real estate related items which I have in front of you, six of them are pretty much routine. One of them is a change of control of one of our existing tenants that's been purchased by another, or a change of control by another company. But the one item that I'd like to bring to your attention is item I-6, which we're very proud to report. It's a long-standing relationship we've had with the Galveston Bay Foundation. It's a request to amend an existing lease, which we've had in place since July of 2013. We want to extend the term by 5 years at an annual base rent of $10 for 1.5 acres and a non-exclusive access road for oyster reef restoration projects. The property is used for storage of reclaimed oyster shells from restaurants and used for Galveston Bay Foundation's oyster shell recycling program. Just kind of one of those items which we're always proud to report because it's something we give back to the community. With that, I can answer questions. I'd like to have your approval to your request to approve items I-1 through I-9.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions, comments? Not all in favor say aye.
Aye.
There we go. Thank you, John. Okay, up next is Roland. Good to see you, Roland Gonzalez. Thank you.
Good morning, Chairman. Good morning, Commissioners. Today I'll present one item for finance. It's J1. This is a result of an RFP evaluation. It's a request for Port Commission to award a 2-year contract to Meter Public Funds for investment consulting and advisory services for the Port Authority's operating and bond fund proceeds. This is for a 2-year contract with 2 2-year extensions for each year, not to exceed $125,000. Services included? Oh, Just to share, services included would be monthly and quarterly investment reporting, performance reporting, investment policy development, and compliance monitoring. Those are the major services.
I move.
I'll second.
Any questions, comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you, Roland.
Thank you.
Okay. Up next is Trey Campbell from Infrastructure. Hey, Trey, good to see you.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and Commissioners. Since we met about 3 weeks ago at the last commission meeting, there are just a couple points I want to bring up. First, together with the community relations, grants, and sustainability teams, we have continued to engage with community and environmental stakeholders to incorporate their inputs and collaborate on grant applications, which are supporting the port's roadmap to net zero. The most recent funding opportunity that has come out is focused on reduction of truck emissions at port facilities, which has a deadline of next month that we're working on pretty vigorously. Another highlight might be the World Hydrogen North America Conference last week, where Maria, Gary, and Rich Burns both participated in panels about engaging community and the role of ports in the energy transition. There were about 750 industry professionals that attended that conference. Now on to the agenda. This month we have 8 items in infrastructure totaling about $9 million. Specifically, item 4 is an amendment to our consulting agreement with Terra Nova Consulting for Environmental Services. You approved this contract back in October 2022 for 2 years, and they have been very busy. So far, we have committed about 90% of that initial funding for several efforts around pre-development on port properties, mainly in the Bayport area. This is supporting our growth and capacity. This amendment simply tops up the available funding for additional tasks in the next year and a half. Terra Nova, by the way, Terra Nova is a woman-owned and managed SMWD firm. Item 1 is also notable in that we are making an advance purchase of electrical equipment needed for the upcoming work in our 87-acre rehabilitation program at Barber's Cut. Supply chain lead times for specialized equipment like electrical substations for the reefer facilities are growing, so this is a great way to kind of mitigate for that. With that, I ask for your approval of items K1 through K8.
So moved. Second.
Any questions or comments?
I have a another observation. I don't think this one will be as detailed.
Okay.
On the electrical substation equipment and everything, I hope and assume that we are figuring in the need for additional reefer capacity at both of our terminals. I was at an Economic Development Foundation meeting out in Baytown yesterday afternoon, and to give you all a flavor of what's going on, TGS currently has 7 pending LOIs for refrigerated storage projects, some of them extremely large. And they specifically ask, or several of the members specifically ask about our ability to handle more reefer trailers. And I assured them that we are in the midst of expanding our capacity, but if these 7 new projects come online, we're talking about an large increase in the need for electricity and reefer connections. So is this part of that project?
So the short answer is yes. You know, in our redevelopment and our master planning for that, we're looking at, you know, understanding the growth of refrigerated cargo and the needs, looking at capacity for that, reefer racks and those type of things. It's a challenge that we continue. If people are talking about building a lot more capacity, we got to get them to talk to us so we'll know what to plan for.
Yeah.
But that's something that we'll continue to do. But yeah, short answer is yes.
Okay. Yeah. It's great business. It's wonderful business.
We just talked about that on our tour. I asked Tom about that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. We really have to, you know, and it's quite involved on our part. I understand. So get ready.
Any other questions, commissioners? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. All right. Operations.
Morning, Chairman. Hello. Morning, commissioners. My name is Mike Schaffner, and I lead the Terminal Technology and Innovations Department within the operations. And that consists of a team that oversees the daily systems and the project related or technology project related items that are critical to the daily operations of State Forest, Barber's Cut, and the docks here at Turning Basin. If I can add on to some of the comments that Roger referenced in terms of volumes, I'll give you some more detail in terms of April. For the container terminal, year-to-date TEUs are flat, as mentioned. However, we did see a softening trend in April. For Barber's Cut and Bayport, April 2023 volumes compared to April 2022 were down 8% for loaded TEUs. Empties were up slightly at 2.9%, and combined we are down 6% in total TEUs for the month. The downturn in the month of April was driven both by import loads, down 11.6%, and export loads, down 2.6%. The export load downturn represents the first month we experienced a downturn in export loads, despite, as prior being mentioned, exports are up 17% year-to-date. Moving to general cargo, tonnage was down 16% through April. This is primarily related to bulk commodities such as coal and petcoke. Steel, the primary driver of activity here at our Northside Turning Basin facility, is up 1% year-to-date, and that's against a strong performance in 2022. Overall, as we know, 2022 was a record year. We did forecast some softening in 2023, but yet we still continue to have a solid year in 2023 so far. Activity. John referenced that the rail ramp is going to resume activity. So that will resume as of June 2nd. BNSF announced last week a service between Barber's Cut and Alliance, which is the Fort Worth-Dallas area, as well as Barber's Cut to Denver. The Alliance Barber's Cut service will operate on Tuesdays and Thursdays, while the Denver service will operate on Fridays. We recognize Dallas as an important area in our region for container movement. We're pleased to see this opportunity to return with BNSF.
What kind of volume do you think is that going to take in terms of, like, TEUs?
The interest has been strong. There's been a lot of conversations that I could provide you with a guess on volumes, but perhaps that wouldn't be.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we'll have a better handle on that number, and if there's some other comments from the room to go around that. But
we think a train of wheat starts, and it can grow beyond that. So that's 240 TEUs. So it's a good start for the rate.
Okay.
It's about 34,000.
Is this the terminal south, I-45 south of Dallas?
No.
Oh.
No, that's UP.
That's UP.
It's northwest of Fort Worth.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
And that's 30,000 trucks off the road.
Right. That's why I asked the question.
Take a moment to speak about safety and recognize the efforts of the team in the area of safety. Each day, we have thousands of users active on our container and general cargo facilities, and the organization puts forth great efforts providing a safe environment for all. Each business day and around the clock, we have operations, port security, and ILA. Approximately 700 employees working outside at our terminals in an environment that has an inherent risk for personal injury. The organization should be proud of our lost time incident rate of 0.20 year to date, and this represents the lowest rate that we're aware of in the industry. Improvements in safety and safety culture is and will be an ongoing effort that remains a priority at Fort Houston. Agenda items, I'll move on to those. I'd like to highlight two agenda items. L5, which is authorizing payments to SmartTech LLC for annual maintenance services for the Marine Terminal's gate operating system software. The gate operating system enables the expedited processing of trucks at our gate, and on average, an average inbound transaction is completed in 40 seconds, an outbound transaction in 5 seconds. L6 is to authorize the payment to Natus LLC for annual maintenance services for the Marine Terminal Operating System. This terminal operating system handles any aspect of daily operations, container inventory, vessel stowage, vessel berthing, and yard operations, and is the core of operational efficiency. If there are no questions, I'd like to present items L1 through L6 for your approval.
Moved.
Second.
Any questions or comments?
Yes.
All in favor say aye.
Yes.
If you have questions, go ahead.
Yeah, I'd like to say, I heard last week we had a great day at a gate movement of 6,000 at Bayport only, and we averaged 29 minutes turnaround. Is that right?
It says, yeah.
Is that under your department? Because if it is, it was a hell of a job.
Yes.
Thank you, sir.
We appreciate that. If we could sustain that, Houston would be way up there.
Thank you, Clyde, for your comments. And as you know, it takes a team out there. So appreciate you.
That's right.
That's what he was saying.
There's no I in team. Mm. This is definitely ILA.
Right.
That's part of the team.
Great job. That was a great job.
Okay, great. Thanks. Thank you, Mike. Okay, great. I think Dave, is Dave going to be here? Yeah. For people? Thanks, Dave.
Yes, good morning. And I think before we get to this item, we need to do a quick hearing for this item, just a break, if anyone has anything that they
okay, so we'll, we will, do we have to adjourn the Port Commission meeting? No? Okay, so let's go ahead and open the hearing.
Very good.
I guess the hearings and possible action of, we're going to open the hearing for the action to restate the Port Authority's 401k defined benefit contribution plan in accordance with IRS restatement requirements. So now the hearing's open. You want to talk about it during the hearing?
I
want you to tell us what it is.
Yeah, I can very quickly. And this is by statute, we need to go through this hearing process. Sometimes it's a little silly. This is one of these cases in which it's a little bit silly. This is just a correction to our existing defined contribution plan.
Okay.
Defined contribution plan, which is for our employees that started on or off after August 2012, is on a set of forms that's pre-approved by the IRS. Every 6 years, the IRS creates a window in which those that have those plans are supposed to restate those plans. During a recent file review, our plan administrator Nationwide realized that we had not done that in a time frame from 2014 to 2016. So all that this is that we're asking is for the Port Commission to approve the plan document that was supposed to go in place at that point in time. The IRS has a corrections program. Nationwide agreed to pay for the filing and prepare and file that document so that that document will go in place and we will be correct with respect to that time window. This will have no impact moving forward because the plan has already been restated subsequently. This is just an administrative hurdle we need to jump over to make sure we remain in compliance.
Okay, well, we'll formally close the hearing, and now we're back in Port Authority meeting, so I'll take a motion for item M1.
Mm-hmm.
Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Excellent. Okay. Mr. Woodring.
Yes, Chairman Commissioners, I'm going to start with some very sad news today. We lost one of our firefighters yesterday, Sean Katori. He was an EO, been here about 9 years with the fire department. Mid-50s, he was diagnosed with cancer this past fall, and he passed away yesterday. So the fire department is working on plans for a memorial with firefighter honors, et cetera. The port has been very gracious. We had a barbecue for him about 6 weeks ago, and the employees of the port contributed greatly to a fund for his family. So I wanted to say thank you to everybody and just let everybody know that he did pass away, and we'll make sure that you hear about any upcoming memorials or services that we have. The second thing, Shell. We had a fire at Shell recently, and our fire boats responded to that and assisted. Great job there. We got a personal note back from Pemex, Shell, same facility there, thanking us for our deployment. Chairman, you mentioned summer is here in your opening remarks. Well, hurricane season is also here. Just want to remind everybody, as department leads, we're going to be talking about hurricane season coming up in the next couple of days. And finally, the safety department. The safety department has moved from finance. Mike Schaffner talked a little bit about the safety numbers. It's moved back over to PSEO. We have a safety director that's going to begin on June 12th. And we're going to be taking a look at a program, reviewing a lot of the SOPs we have, things like that to make sure our employees remain safe going forward. Which leads me to the one item we have on the agenda today, and that's safety boots. And we'd like a approval for a contract with Boot Barn to provide safety boots for our people. One, to keep them safe. Two, it standardizes the boots we use. And three, we get economy of scale by doing a contract.
So moved.
Second. Yeah. Any questions or comments? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Captain. Okay. Mr. Thompson, you're up. Technology.
Good morning, Chairman, Commissioners. The Technology Division is Section O. Section O has only one item for your consideration this month. It is a three-order form item for subscription-based services, licensing, training, and delivery assurance. The action requests a not-to-exceed amount of $20 million over a 15-year period, which includes organizational headcount growth. 100%, as Maxine mentioned, 100% of the spend is with an SMWBE vendor and utilizes a Texas DIR account. Texas DIR account cooperative agreement. Chairman, normally I'm crisp, but if you guys would indulge me, I'd take a little more time on this item. Enterprise resource planning, complex as it might be, it's a type of software application that integrates the port's core business. In the requests of functional areas of finance, accounting, procurement, human resource management. It provides a centralized application. Once we implement, we'll challenge how we optimize and do our daily work. Subscription-based licensing is priced on and paid for on an annual basis. But through our negotiations, we've been able to deal with ramped-up pricing so that we can avoid what we call innovation indexes and our classic CPI. The Workday platform we selected, it's a specific brand of enterprise resource planning, as we branded our internal program, Next Gen ERP. So let me tell you a little history about the work we've already done and the road ahead. Around 2018, our current ERP vendor made us aware that the future investment in our platform is going to end. As a CIO, I heard end of life, end of service, end of support, so we quickly started to assess where we were and realize that we had a number of applications that could be retired and integrated into the core. We broke it down into three phases. Phase one contained scope for feature functions requirements, and we prioritized by the importance of the functional areas that IT supports. We did some implementation scenarios and strategies we had to analyze, which became inputs for what we call phase two. The phase two scope included technical terms, as-is and to-be processes, in essence, how we do things today and how we should do them tomorrow, things that come with moments that matter, pain points, and more importantly, we did demonstration scenarios. Nearly 48 days, nearly 15,000 scores across 50 folks who are going to be users of this system, and realized that the Workday platform was the best platform for human capital management and finance. Now, I want to note, phase three, which we're in now, implementation support services and RFP for implementing the software we're asking you to approve is currently on the street and was advertised on the 17th with the procurement team's strong help. And we have a pre-bidders conference on May 24th. So let me recap. This RCA asks for Workday software over a 15-year period, 100% spend for SMWBE. It's important to note that we call something called Pillar 3, which is asset management, maintenance management, inventory and management, and project construction management will come before this body at a later date. And the RCA for choosing an implementation partner will come back as well. That being said, I'd be happy to take any questions, and I ask for your approval on this one item.
So moved.
Second.
Any questions, Commissioners?
I do want to say something about the project that we're doing. This is a very complicated. Mm-hmm. It's going to take a lot of resources, both internally and externally. As you said, we're going to get somebody to come in. But this is one of those make or break the next generation, using his words, mm-hmm. of our financials, of our HRs. So we will be having our staff, along with outside people, spending hours and hours and hours in the coming years. So I want to thank Charles and his group for getting this through, but I also want to thank the other 100-plus people that have been the subject matter experts and looking at what we're doing, because the biggest part of this is we have to get better. We can't just take what we're doing today and move it into the new system if it's not the best way to do it. So our staff has been going through their procedures, their policies for a year plus now. And this should be a very clean transition to a new ERP. Can't say, I'll use his lawyer stuff, I can't say perfect, but it is something that a lot of companies have major problems with, and we're trying to cut that off by all the pre-work that has been done. So it's something that no one sees, but it has been a tremendous amount of work the last couple of years.
No question. Great job so far, and keep up the really hard and good work. Thank you. Any other questions? If not, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, so we're going to go into the Texas
Court. Let's take a short break before we go into the closed session.
Yep. We'll take a short break.
Now, 10:53, 3 a.m., the Port Commission of the 40th Authority of Harrison County, Texas, will now convene in a closed meeting permitted by the Texas Open Meetings Act and Government Code, conduct a private consultation with attorneys, including consultations regarding claims of Great Lakes Dredge and Dock Company, claims of the Port Authority against TPC Group, claims of Standard Constructors, and proposed amendments to Green Legal Services, Baker Botts, LLP, deliberate regarding real estate, including the acquisition of Galveston Bay vicinity property, economic development negotiations, incentive, employment evaluation, public employees, security-related matters. Court Commission will reconvene in public session after the closed meeting is adjourned.
Okay, so it is 11:15 a.m. on Tuesday, May 23rd. We're going to have the Port Houston meeting reopened, so let's go ahead and call the meeting to order.
I'd like to make a motion. I move to authorize the Port Authority to respond to the mediator's proposal regarding Standard Constructors, Inc. on the terms discussed in executive session and to do all other things reasonable or necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second. Okay. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Ayes have it.
Mr. Chairman, I move to authorize the Port Authority to amend the agreement for legal services with Baker Botts, LLP, on the terms discussed in executive session, and that authorize the chief legal officer to do all things necessary to give effect to the foregoing.
Second.
Okay. Any questions or comments? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Okay, great. I think that is the end of this meeting. We'll our next meeting is on June the 27th. So let's we will adjourn the meeting now. So the meeting stands adjourned.